I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about ways to get ready for a big storm or other natural disaster. This Sunday kicks off Severe Weather Preparedness Week, which will include many experiences designed to help Hoosiers make plans for those times when the weather isn't just ugly, it's dangerous. My guests will be meteorologist Jason Puma and Mike Ryan of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. Please join the conversation. Give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Email is nolimits@wfyi.org. Facebook is nolimitswfyi. And Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news.
No Limits is made possible by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking today about severe weather in honor of Severe Weather Preparedness Week, which starts this Sunday. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. Well, my guests are meteorologists Jason Puma and Mike Ryan of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. Mike is a veteran of the program, but Jason, this is your first visit. We're glad to have you both here.
Good to be here, John.
Thank you.
Well, let's start. Tell me a little bit about what Severe Weather Preparedness Week is, what its genesis was, and all of that.
Well, I think it goes back to some of the big tornado outbreaks. We think about the Palm Sunday outbreak in 1965 and the big super outbreak in 1974. And, you know, when lives were lost during those events, the Weather Service and NOAA wanted to come out with ways to get people more prepared to help save lives, because that's the primary mission of the Weather Service, to protect lives and properties of Americans. So in part of that, we need to be prepared. We need to reach out to public so that they know exactly what to do, how to get warning information, and what to do when they receive that warning information ahead of time prior to the tornado bearing down on your home.
In terms of what the week consists of, I noticed looking at your website, the activities are different from state to state, and sort of the structure of the week is different. How do you go about deciding what lessons you're going to pound home, say, in Indiana as opposed to Alabama?
Well, we do a little bit of that based upon the special needs in Indiana, and we do a little bit of it in our spotter talks that we present this time of year. Indiana, we experience a wide variety of tornadoes and threats. The primary threats that we receive in Indiana really is straight line winds from thunderstorms. That's where the most common thing we see here in Indiana, which is not the same thing that happens in, say, Oklahoma, where they might have a bigger threat from those larger F5 tornadoes. Now, that doesn't mean that we won't get an F5 here and we don't have to be prepared, because those can happen here and we have to prepare for those as well. But often in our spotter training, we will say, hey, well, most common things that you're going to see here in central Indiana are straight line winds with smaller, weaker tornadoes that can be just as that can be damaging on a smaller scale.
But you're not, Mike, going to focus as much, say, on hurricanes here as
well,
you would in Florida. Sort of stuff. So it is specific to the place.
It's specific to the location, as Jason mentioned. And we do hit on the damaging wind threat, hail threat, because those are types of severe weather that we see. I think everybody immediately thinks sometimes with severe weather that tornadoes are the flashy type of severe weather. But when you look historically, really about two-thirds of the types of severe weather that we see in Indiana are, as Jason mentioned, the damaging wind threat. And that does cause a lot of impact. We can see winds out of these thunderstorms that are equivalent to an EF1 tornado, and that can do a lot of damage to homes, to structures, to schools. And so to give individuals, give Hoosiers basically tools to protect themselves, what to look for. And so we do that in a variety of ways. using this week as an example, as Jason mentioned, the spotter talks, which we're actively in right at the moment, to basically help prepare, make a weather-ready nation, if you will.
Probably should ask, could you give me a definition of what a spotter talk is?
Sure.
Either one of you.
This time of year, the Weather Service, our office, we're heading out to almost every county in central Indiana. And we visit with our current ongoing weather spotters. And our weather spotters are folks that have an interest in weather, and they're out there reporting what they see during storms to us to give us the ground truth information of what's going on. So we're always looking for new spotters. So during the next few months, we're out in every county in central Indiana. There's a list on our webpage of when and where those talks are going to be. And we give about a two-hour presentation letting spotters and our current spotters and new spotters know what to look for, how to stay safe, and how to report to us so they have a good idea of giving us good information so we can help aid our warnings that way.
What are some of the highlights of one of these spotter talks?
Well, I think with those, we certainly want to give folks tools. With the explosion of social media and basically having radar at your fingertips with your smartphone, a lot of people have the ability to look at things in a split second. And so we want to take the radar data and compare it and show what type of weather you would see comparing to the radar data in different locations. So we do that. We talk about reporting procedures. And it's also an opportunity to really interact with our emergency management communities, which those folks are critical in those different counties. And also the amateur radio community, which we rely very heavily on amateur radio as a means to get information to and from the Weather Service. And those folks are volunteers that they do it on their own time. They do it because they have a passion for it. And really, we can't do our jobs to the best of our abilities without their efforts.
What kinds of things do you tell them to look for, though, in terms of the basics to call you when it does look like it's something serious?
Well, we teach a little bit about storm structure and what kind of weather to expect in different kinds of storm structure. So when, like Mike was saying, when you're looking at radar, well, are we looking at what we call a squall line, which is a big long line of thunderstorms, or are we looking at a supercell thunderstorm, which is a thunderstorm with a rotating updraft? And we talk about, well, identifying those types, what type of severe weather is most likely with that each type of storm. What kind of things, visual cues you might see in the sky with respect to where you might be in regards to that storm. If you're in the middle of the storm and it's raining really hard, for example, you're not going to be able to see much because it's raining really hard. But if you get yourself in a good location in relation to, say, a Superbelt cell storm, maybe on the south side of it perhaps, where there isn't any rain, you might have a very good chance of seeing a view of a tornado or something like that. So we talk a little bit about position. We talk about different types of storms and what you might see in depending upon where you are in relation to what's on radar.
Now, how do you guys feel about the? Obviously, there's a term that has exploded into the public consciousness over the probably past 15 years or so. The idea of storm chasers, people who do this just out of an interest. Are they a help to you, a hindrance? Response?
For the most part, I'd say that they're a help.
Yes.
The far majority of storm chasers out there are helpful to us because they will provide information for us to help us get that warning information out.
Who are the ones who are not a help?
Well,
I think those are the folks that go out there thinking that they have the knowledge base, to be able to help us, and they may not have the tools. A lot of these experienced storm chasers that go out have radar data, computer capabilities, so they always know where they are in relation to the storm, and they have enough of a familiarity in going out with these storms that they know exactly where they need to be without putting themselves into unknown danger. I mean, I've heard stories before of people that go out and want to chase storms that are moving very rapidly at 1 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to see at 1 a.m?
We are talking about Severe Weather Preparedness Week, which starts this Sunday. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do so by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. And obviously, being in a severe storm or a tornado can be a horrifying experience. We've got a clip that is part of a much larger story that's going to appear on Sound Medicine this weekend. And since it appears at different times around the state, please check your local listings. But we'd like to play you get some sense of just how severe and how horrifying being in part of a major storm can be.
The tornado touched down, and within a few minutes of touching down, it had killed 100 people and then went on to injure over 1,500. So I assisted in the trauma bays initially and saw injuries that I'd read about in textbooks. I used to be an EMT, so this looked like a lot of what I'd read about, flail chest and other incredible injuries. I had the opportunity to be with patients at the end of their lives and also to help try to save some lives. It was clearly out of my element, and there was a whole bunch of patients that were showing up there who had been basically taken out of St. John's Hospital, which had been destroyed, and placed in this discharge unit. And these were medical patients, with a huge exception. They were medical patients who, some of them had witnessed the roof flying off their hospital just minutes before.
That was a clip from Sound Medicine, which you'll be able to hear the whole thing this weekend on many IPBS stations. I'd like to thank Chris Lieber of Sound Medicine for providing us with that clip. It demonstrates really the tremendous destructive force that severe weather can have. And I guess where I'd like to go, it's often seemed to me that, you know, when it comes to weather, there's not a whole lot of in-between. You either have the storm chasers, the people who are really passionate about it, and the others who just sort of assume everything's going to be all right, that there's not much of a ground in-between. Is that part of what you're trying to address with Severe Weather Preparedness Week?
Yeah, it is. We want to just make sure everybody has a thought on their mind about whether they're at their home or their place of business, to have a plan in place if a tornado were to strike your home or a tornado warning is issued. What do you do at your workplace? Where does everybody go? What do you do about your home? At your home, does everybody in your family know where to go? It's kind of like, you know, back in elementary school or high school, we all had fire drills and we knew that the bell would go off and everybody knew that was a time we're practicing to march outside in case there was a fire. Well, Severe Weather Preparedness Week is the same sort of thing. We want everybody to just take a few moments to think about, well, if a tornado is coming at my workplace or if a tornado is coming at my house or school, what do I do?
So what are the outreach efforts then this week to get that message across, Mike?
Well, I think besides utilizing the spotter talks, which are going on during this time frame, but also it's reaching out via the local emergency management, coming here, reaching out via media, via our TV folks here in town and throughout central Indiana, the radio folks, and really just to get people thinking about severe weather. As you know, the weather today and yesterday has shown, we seem to be shifting gears out of the winter. And so as we move away from...
You're going to jinx us here, Mike. All right, you're going to jinx us.
As we move away from, I think, the... you know, the focus on snowy roads and ice and things like that, and shifting gears to severe weather. It's an ideal time to kind of refresh everybody's mind of, hey, you know, during the spring and summer is when we see the most common threats for severe weather, but they can happen at any time of the year. And so now's a perfect time to look at that and to kind of get the message out and get people to be thinking about what they can do to make sure they stay safe during severe weather.
How receptive are people to that message? Because obviously we you know, tornadoes, thunderstorms are part of the Midwestern experience and have been pretty much for as long as people have been here. But we continue to have to keep talking about this.
I think people are pretty receptive to it. It's not something that a lot of people, like you say, it's a lot of, not everything that somebody thinks about every day. But when we do our outreach events or we talk to people, hey, do you know how to keep safe? Everybody's very interested. They want to keep themselves safe, but it's a matter of just thinking about it, having a plan ahead of it, time, and maybe just practicing it once or twice.
And what sort of things should they practice?
Well, like I said, having a plan. Next week during our Severe Weather Preparedness Week on Thursday is our test day. And we'll be issuing on Thursday two test tornado drills, one in the morning and one in the evening. And during that time, NOAA Weather Radio and local media, they will sound alarms and issue those test tornado warnings. And that's when we suggest you do the same at your house. Make sure you have a way to get in information and make sure you have a activate your local plan so you know what to do when it's for real.
And just to clarify, when you say 1 in the morning, you don't mean it's going to occur at 1 a.m.
That's right. Okay. Well, oh, yes. One during the morning hours.
Okay. I think it's like 10:15.
Yes. Yeah.
We are talking about severe weather preparedness week. Here on No Limits, my guests are meteorologist Jason Puma and Mike Ryan of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about severe weather in honor of Severe Weather Preparedness Week, which starts on Sunday and runs through March 21st. My guests are meteorologist Jason Puma and Mike Ryan. They're both with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. Well, one of the things that perhaps we could talk about are there certain myths about severe weather preparedness that we ought to knock down. My producer and I were chatting, and that one about, because we're of similar vintage, being told when we were kids that you should open all the windows. Are there others that probably people should not do?
Well, yeah, opening the windows.
That's a big one.
Yeah. There's no need, if a tornado is coming at your house, there's no need to open the windows. Just get to your safe location. I think another one, perhaps, is people think that if you're in a big city, you're safe because tornadoes don't like to strike big cities. And we certainly know that's not true.
So they're conscious beings now.
Yes.
They think they have feelings. A little, you know, therapy would work with them.
Well, and I'll flip that around to your point. You know, I think a lot of people also think, you know, granted, we don't have mountains necessarily here in Indiana, but we have more hilly country in the southern part of the state. And I think there's a misconception that hilly country, mountainous country, tornadoes won't go in and through that. And that's been proven time and time again to be wrong. And in fact, during one of the big outbreaks that impacted us here in Indiana back in 74, the super outbreak, there were a number of tornadoes that did damage in the Appalachian Mountains with that event, which pretty much dispelled that.
We are talking about severe weather preparedness here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. Rev, welcome to the program.
Thank you. I had three questions. One on lightning. And is it true that you have to be very careful, even if you don't see lightning, that if you hear thunder, even if it's long, long away from you, that you could get struck? And can you feel it? Can you actually feel your hair going up and tingle on the skin? Secondly, you said safe places for tornadoes. Well, does that mean, I've heard it said closets are good because they're interior and they got a lot of wooden structure around you. Thirdly, you talked about tall, you know, cities never being struck. Well, I don't think I've ever heard of a tall commercial or apartment building being struck. It always seems to be little residential homes or trailer parks. And fourthly, is it true that tornadoes are really only native to the Midwestern of the United States and not in the rest of the world? Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for the call, Rev.
Well, we can take a piecemeal. I'll take the lightning part of his question. Yes, one thing that we do talk about is if you can hear thunder, you're close enough to be struck by lightning. That's one reason we encourage individuals that even after a storm has ended, maybe the rain has ended, sun's starting to come back out, if you still hear that thunder, lightning can still strike you. And we've had numerous occasions of that happening, you know, throughout time with that. So that's certainly one thing. You know, we encourage you to wait maybe half an hour after a storm ends before you head back outside. And just to finish on his point, you know, we have gotten reports before of people feeling their, you know, briefly before they're struck by lightning, that their hair can stand on end. I don't think it happens every time, but it can, and that just has to do with the electrical charge associated with a lightning strike.
Yeah, the main thing with lightning safety is just get yourself inside a sturdy building.
Right.
When you hear thunder, that means it's time to stop your outdoor activities and get inside and safe places.
Yeah, don't hold metal objects into the
air.
Precisely.
Right.
Like that.
Yeah.
Right. When you hear that thunder, it's time to come in and stay safe. So his second question was about cities and the, severe weather never striking high rises. And I'll say that's not true. You know, we've had tornadoes in cities. For example, Salt Lake several years ago had a tornado downtown, which was very rare for Salt Lake City. And here in Indianapolis as well. We didn't have a tornado go through, but I believe it was, it may have been a Final Four weekend about 5 to 10 years ago. We had some very strong straight line winds that went through and broke windows high aloft on one of the buildings
downtown.
Wasn't
that the Regions Bank building, what we used to think of as the old Indiana National Bank building?
Precisely. Yeah. And that all those windows were blown out and glass rained down. Fortunately, there was nobody below, but if there was, that glass would have rained down on somebody and potentially hurt them. So those are two prime examples of severe weather in cities.
And I think the other question
had to
was,
do with the closet, I think. And
And then there was also a question about whether tornadoes are basically a Midwestern American phenomenon.
They aren't necessarily a Midwestern American phenomenon, but the atmospheric conditions are such that we see them in greatest continuity over the Central Plains and into the Midwest part of America. Across the world.
Why is that?
Well, it's because we have warm, moist air that comes up from the Gulf of Mexico. We have kind of a cool, dry air mass that's interacting that comes down from Canada. And as we have those air masses interact, it helps to promote some of the instability, some of the wind shear that we see aloft that help to contribute to severe thunderstorms and the potential for thunderstorms to rotate. So where we see that come most in common is across the Plain States, and that's why they have the moniker of Tornado Alley there, where we see the greatest frequency of tornadoes.
Yeah, we essentially have all the best ingredients in the world.
Yes.
In the Mississippi and Ohio and Plain States, all the ingredients for tornadoes, it's the best in the world right here. So that's why we're so prone to them.
Yeah, we have the best crock pot, I guess.
Yeah, that's right.
Mix it all up.
So,
and then the thing about the closet.
Right.
Question about the
closet. He was concerned about, where do I go? Well, ideally, the best place to go is the most interior room on the lowest floor of a building. So if you have a basement, that's the best place to go. If you don't have a basement, like at my house, I don't have a basement. We go to the most interior room, which is a closet underneath the stairs. You want to get yourself away from windows. Put as many walls between you and the outside area as possible. And if you really don't have a really good spot to go, you know, try to find a good spot to go. I know I don't have a basement at my home, but my neighbor, he does have a basement. So if it's a bad tornado day, I might talk to my neighbor and say, hey, do you mind if I come over this afternoon when the storms go through? I can hang out in the basement. We can make some popcorn and watch some TV as the storms go through and stay safe.
That's right.
So it's good to make friends with your neighbors and also have a safe place to go.
What are the most common mistakes that people make, when they get hit? I mean, I know we've talked about having a plan, so we'll go with the assumption you should have a plan, but what should the ingredients of that plan be?
Well,
and we've already established don't open windows.
Right. And that was going to be the first thing, because I think that is a mistake some people make. You know, they open those windows and that opens you to flying debris, which can cause, even if you're not in direct path of the tornado, if it's kicking out all sorts of debris and that hits you, that can still cause injury and maybe worse. I think that's one thing. I think another thing is just that people sometimes underestimate maybe the severity and that's potential severity that the storm may bring and how quickly it may come. And that's why we encourage people that when that warning is issued, that's when you need to be going to your safe place, not when you see the tornado, not when you need to be taking shelter as soon as that goes into effect.
So like Mike was saying, he mentioned getting that warning information. So that's a key part of being prepared, is having multiple ways of getting that warning information, whether it be through your cell phone, through NOAA Weather Radio, or through local media. Because if you don't get the information, if you don't get the warning, you won't be able to put your plan into place. So it's important to have lots of different ways to get that warning information so you know what to do.
Yeah, chances are you're not going to be able to outrun winds that are moving at 70 or 80 miles an hour, right? So let's talk a little bit about the why of choosing this time of year to have severe weather preparedness week? I mean, presumably it is because the weather does tend to be more severe at this point, at least more volatile. Could you talk a little bit about why that is?
Well, I think we've touched a little bit on it already, John. One is coming out of the winter and, and getting people to kind of change their focus to more of the weather impacts that we see during the warmer time of the year. In addition, you know, we talked about all the best ingredients as they come together. Well, we tend to see that most frequently during the spring and into the early part of the summer. So the greatest risk for severe weather tends to be during this time frame, mid to late March up through about June. Now, that doesn't mean that other times of the year we don't see severe weather. Some of our biggest tornado events, like what we had a couple of years ago, happened in the middle of November. But this is where the frequency is greatest and where we have all those ingredients coming together most often.
Yeah, like Mike said, we can get tornadoes, and we have gotten tornadoes in any month of the year here in Indiana. And they have happened, and they'll happen again. But if you were to take a list of all of our tornadoes and plot them on when they occurred, you'd find the greatest number of tornadoes occur during the months of March, April, May, and June. So as we head into these upcoming months, that's when we primarily see the most of our tornadoes. So this is a time we need to start thinking about severe weather preparedness.
We are talking about severe weather preparedness here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. Well, we've seen that the volatility of weather patterns, particularly on the coasts, you know, with the hurricanes and the storms, does seem to have increased in recent years. I think, Mike, last time you were on the program, we talked about this. And I'd like to get us into the conversation to some degree about climate change and whether, you know, the evidence seems fairly strong that certainly with those storms, climate change has played some role in the severity and you know, the increased number of those storms. We can have the discussion about what's causing climate change another time, because that seems to be the thing that sets people off. But I guess what I'd like to say is, have we seen a similar effect here in the Midwest? You know, we don't get a whole lot of tropical storms here. We don't get hurricanes. We don't get tsunamis. We don't get those kinds of things. But as you pointed out, we do get severe, really severe thunderstorms, and we do get tornadoes. So have we seen an increase in the volatility in the weather patterns here?
I don't know if we've necessarily seen an increase in the volatility of the weather patterns. Where, you know, our tornado numbers, I think, in general have, at least how often they're witnessed, have increased over the last 30 and 40 years. Now, that, I think, is largely due to the efforts of the Weather Service, NOAA, the media, and our efforts to increase awareness, education, the expansion of our spotter networks, as we've talked about. Because when you look at just more intense tornadoes, those tornadoes that are of EF2 scale or greater in intensity.
Probably ought to explain what EF2 is.
Basically, with the EF scale, it's the Enhanced Fujita scale. And the higher the number, the greater amounts of wind, the higher the wind speeds, the greater amounts of damage. And typically, EF2 or greater are tornadoes with wind speeds of over 110 miles per hour. And the point I was going to make with that is while we've seen the frequency of tornadoes increase, we haven't seen the frequency of intense tornadoes increase. They've stayed largely steady state when you look at the data over the last 50, 60 years. You know, these events that we talk about in our history, like the Palm Sunday outbreak in 1965, the super outbreak in 74, and then we have outbreaks like the one that impacted Alabama and the Southeast in 2011. So I don't think necessarily the volatility has changed in that regard at all. I think it's more public awareness has increased, and you've got people that are living out further and further away from cities.
We've gotten an email from a listener named Mary, and if you'd like to reach out to us by email, you can do so at nolimits@wfyi.org. Mary says, I work in an office that is up high and looks to the west. I see some bad storms coming frequently, but could your experts talk about identifying a scud cloud? Many times I think a cloud is a scud cloud, but it's not. probably ought to identify again what a Scud cloud is.
Well, a Scud cloud is essentially...
I think of Arthur Kemp.
Well, a Scud cloud, that's essentially a term that storm chasers and meteorologists will use to define a kind of a raggedy-looking cloud that might be potentially scary-looking, but isn't necessarily notable in features. It's not really rotating, and it's kind of unusual because most people don't see it very often. Mm-hmm. But when we come to our spotter talks, we talk about Scud clouds and we talk about the features to look for. For example, when we look for tornadoes, we're looking for wall clouds. And what a wall cloud is a lowering of from the rain-free base of a thunderstorm where it's not raining, and it's a dropping down. It's a point of inflow where the main updraft of a thunderstorm is located, where all the wind is being blown towards that single point. Now, conversely, we have we often deal with shelf clouds, mm-hmm. and these are these clouds that are essentially rolling clouds out ahead of a squall line, and these are big, long clouds that stretch across the horizon. And I bet you what our emailer is talking about from her high rod, Mary, is talking about. You know, she's looking out and she sees this big, long, spanning, rolling cloud out ahead of some thunderstorms, and that's a shelf cloud.
How would she, at a glance, is there a way for her to tell the difference between the two of them, the one identifying sign or something that...
Well, the main thing with Scud clouds is they typically don't last very long. They're usually there only briefly, and they're not very organized. When you look at a shelf cloud or a wall cloud, you'll see that these are organized features. They will last over a persistent period of time, and they will continue to exist as they're moving along with the main thunderstorms.
So if it disappears fairly quickly, it likely was a Scud cloud?
Correct.
Yeah, okay. Chances are it probably is, yeah.
Okay, we are talking about severe weather preparedness in advance of severe weather preparedness week. That's a mouthful to get through. My guests are meteorologist Jason Puma and Mike Ryan of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. Got an email from a listener named Chad who says he enjoys the program and I'm listening online from Elkhart County. Well, that's good to know. Thank you, Chad, for joining us today. He says, my question is, in the event of a weather emergency when evacuation to community storm shelter is required, are pets allowed? If not, why not? I would rather stay in my home and ride out the storm weather than leave without my canine companions. Can you talk about severe weather preparations regarding pets?
Well, I think obviously, when you're looking to shelter, in your home, you obviously want to have the pets with you. I know, this is kind of funny. We have a pet rabbit at home, mm-hmm. a pet bunny. And what we'll do when the weather is significant, it looks like we need to take shelter down in the basement, we'll get him in his cage and we'll put him down in the basement. So he's with us. As to the impacts with going to a shelter and how to do with pets, really that's up to the local officials how they handle that. I would just certainly, take every step that you normally would if you were let's say if you were kenneling your pet almost a little bit, taking steps to protect them, put him or her in their, their cage or whatever, and keep them with you in a safe location where they're away from windows and such.
And really the same goes for people too. If you end up having to shelter because a tornado strikes your area and you're going to be out of power for a couple of weeks, you want to have a kit ready. And what I mean by a kit is a safety kit, emergency preparedness kit that contains several things that you might need for, say, 3 or 4 or 5 days in order to survive, so to get through that time when you might not have power or access. So we're talking about having extra water on hand, having flashlight with batteries, having medications, having a first aid kit, having a battery-powered radio, these sort of things that you can use to help yourself be prepared to be able to ride out a storm. So in our emailer's case, have some extra dog food.
We are talking about severe weather preparedness here on No Limits. My guests are meteorologist Jason Puma and Mike Ryan. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about severe weather preparedness in advance of Severe Weather Preparedness Week, which starts on Sunday. My guests are meteorologist Jason Puma and Mike Ryan of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. We've gotten a comment from a listener named Robert, and if you'd like to reach out to us on Facebook, you can do so at No Limits WFYI. Robert says, don't wait and don't peek. Getting that storm video can kill you. Response?
He's right.
He's definitely right.
During our spotter talks, we actually get a lot of storm video, and we have some spotters that we often we love their video,
yeah,
because they show the power of the severe weather. But
also
we
show
often,
what not to do.
Yeah, they kind of show us what not to do, and yeah, then sometimes I'll call them an idiot or something, yeah, like that. Say, what are you doing? Why are you putting yourself at risk? Because really, we don't want any of our spotters or anybody putting themselves at risk.
And I think that's one big message from the spotter talks, John, that we really try to hammer home. As great as that video is and being able to get us that report from your location.
Hard to do the report if you're dead.
Exactly. Yeah. And safety is first and foremost. We are never going to ask anyone to put themselves in a harmful position just to get a report to us. Safety comes first and first and foremost always.
And in fact, we really don't even recommend chasing. We can't tell people not to chase because, hey, this is America and people can do whatever they want to do.
Yeah.
But we really don't recommend it. I'd much rather people spot severe weather from right next door to their storm shelter. So when things look like it's time to get into the safety of their storm shelter, they can get right to a safe place very quickly.
Yes.
We've gotten emails from two listeners named Jerry and Mike that are on similar themes. So I'm going to try to synthesize them. They really want you to comment on the likely relationship between severe weather events and global climate change and really the... In Jerry's case, he's talking about dependence upon burning coal to generate electricity. In Mike's case, he's talking about the pollution helping to create the problem, and would like the two of you to respond.
I was going to say, I think offhand, there's nothing specific that that's been really found with the with our climate changing and the impacts that has, as we talked about, John, on the volatility of severe weather. Mm-hmm. One thing I always say, our climate is always changing, and we've seen instances of these severe weather events occur back through our history. Next week, for instance, we're going to celebrate the 90th anniversary of the Tri-State Tornado, which is the longest track tornado in U.S. recorded history. It was on the ground for over 600 miles across Missouri, Illinois, and Indiana, and that happened, nearly 100 years ago. It happened in 1925. So offhand, there's nothing there specific to severe weather trends and how they're impacted, by the global climate changes. I mean, the last 2 years have been relatively quiet years for severe weather when you look at it from the entire country standpoint, especially considering how active things were in 2011 when we saw over 500 fatalities from tornadoes. I think in a nutshell, it's really hard to draw a specific line for that.
A direct cause and effect.
Exactly.
But is it like, I think getting to Jerry and Mike's questions, it is, if we are pumping all of this stuff into the atmosphere, it's likely to have some effect, right?
Yeah, it probably does.
Probably does.
But we don't know. That's the thing. It's
exactly.
Kind of like the atmosphere is an ongoing experiment, and we don't know to be certain what kind of effects it's having.
Right.
We are talking about severe weather and severe weather preparedness here on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Ashley, welcome to the program.
Hello. I'm interested in your list of things that you need, dog food, water, food for yourself, and you're leaving out one that I've heard mentioned and that I thoroughly endorse. You need cash. If the credit cards don't work because the ATM machines and the electricity is not available, some people say $3,000 in cash. That seems a bit excessive to me, almost dangerous to have that much cash on. But you certainly do need to have cash.
Yes, that's a great point.
Yep,
and
absolutely.
There's been cases where you want to fill up your tank with gas, but there's no credit cards available or anything like that at the gas station, and you only need cash. You can only take cash because all the electronics are down. So, like our caller says, that's a great point that you should have some part of cash available, maybe not too much because you don't want it to be a dangerous situation. Another very good point.
Yeah, you do not want it saying, I'm prepared for a storm to be synonymous with come rob me, please.
Yeah.
But thank you very much for the call and the comment, Ashley.
And by the way, I'm at the intersection of Mississippi and Route 30, and traffic is a disaster.
Oh, no. I hope it will move for you. Thanks very
thank
much
you.
For the call. Well, we've also gotten a question from a listener who did not want to go on the air. And it's more a comment. He says, it's a good idea, or she, it's a good idea to tell family members what the emergency plan is. Let everyone know the plan.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's very important, you know, if you have small children, you know, to be able to sit down with them during the upcoming week's severe weather awareness and just refresh their memories about, okay, when we have a watch, when a warning is issued, when there's a threat for severe weather or tornadoes, here's where we're going to go in the house. Here's what we're going to do. Absolutely important. And, you know, I've found when I go out to do a lot of the spotter talks, the children are great because they, you know, they go, oh, you know, at school, this is what we do. This is where we go. We go into the interior hallway of the school and put our hands over our heads. This is the place where we should go for our safe location in the house. And they're really the ones that are kind of the drivers in the house of you know, saying, oh, we got to be in this place in our safe location. So absolutely, everyone needs to be aware of it.
Gotten an email from a listener named Rick, and if you'd like to reach out to us by email, you can do so at nolimits@wfyi.org. Rick says, is it ever entirely safe to be outside when there is audible thunder or visible lightning? I'm always concerned when sitting at kids' baseball games with thunder rumbling in the distance. Should thunder in and of itself always be a reason to immediately seek shelter? When is it safe to stay outside?
We like to follow the motto, when thunder roars, head indoors. Mm-hmm. All right, so if you're hearing thunder, like we were saying in one of the earlier segments, it's time to get indoors, whether you're at a baseball park or out jogging or whatever the case may be. That anytime you hear thunder, you're close enough to that lightning, that thunderstorm, where you could get struck.
So at a baseball game, especially with, you know, if it's a Little League baseball game where they're all using metal bats these days, it's probably more deadly. Now, are there state laws or rules in regard to when they have, like, many years ago, I was a lifeguard, and I know there were specific guidelines for when you had to close the pool. You had to get everybody out, and you had to wait at least 30 minutes from the time that the last lightning had been seen.
There aren't any necessarily any state laws. Most of the preparedness plans in those regard for little leagues are decided upon by the leagues themselves, the commissioners of those various leagues. And safety, from whenever we talk to those folks, that's one of the most important things to those leagues. So they're trying to keep people safe at all times.
And to take it just a step further, one thing that people may have seen a little bit more of over the last several years is large event venues have an interesting issue where you have a lot of people, let's say, in a stadium and you mm-hmm. have a thunderstorm or some form of severe weather that's coming.
Oh, like the state fair.
Exactly. And there's been a greater push for these event venues to develop their own plans and you know, certainly work with us in consultation and other groups. And, I mean, I think back to just this past college football season. I think the first week or two in September, you had a number of locations. I think one was West Virginia University, where they delayed and they cleared the stadium. Mm-hmm. And that was for lightning and severe weather. And so it's good that more and more event venues are taking advantage of that and, you know, finding methods to get these people safe.
Gotten a Facebook question from a listener named Robert, and if you'd like to reach out to us via Facebook, you can do so at No Limits, WFYI. Robert says, am I right in thinking a tornado warning means it's coming, a watch means it's likely?
Anytime we have a watch for anything, it means those conditions for that event are favorable. Doesn't mean that it's happening when we have a watch. So a tornado watch means conditions are favorable for that event, whether it's a tornado watch, a severe thunderstorm watch, or a flood watch, or in the winter, a winter storm watch. When we issue the warning, that means that weather event is imminent or it's already occurring. So when we issue that tornado warning for an area, that means we're expecting a tornado in that area. Or could, if we issue a severe thunderstorm warning, that means we're expecting winds of greater than 58 miles an hour or hail larger than a quarter in diameter. So the warning means it's actually happening. It's time to take shelter. That's your time to get ready. The watch is more like the heads up. Say, hey, I need to pay extra attention to what's going on.
So let me ask this. If we are, you know, we've now established, obviously, if you're at your home or in a building when a storm occurs, you should get somewhere at the lowest floor, interior, put as many walls as possible between you and the weather. What if that's not possible? Let's say you are driving on a long stretch of highway and you're between exits or whatever. Is it safest to keep moving? You see people often in that case, you know, try to pull all the way up under underpasses. Is that a good idea? What in those circumstances should you do to protect yourself?
Well, you have to assess the situation first. If the tornado is off in the distance, say it's ahead of you, and it's moving across the road, the best thing you can do is just stop. Stop. Let the tornado go by and don't drive into the tornado and just stay put. So that would be ideal thing to do. If the tornado is in the distance and you're in a bigger city and there might be some public buildings around, get into that building if you have enough time and find a safe spot there if it's a public place. In a situation where the tornado is bearing down on your car, you're driving along, the tornado is coming at you at 70 miles an hour, and you know you can't. There's no place left to go. In that sort of situation, you want to get out of your car, you want to get away from your car, and get into a ditch on the side of the road and cover your head. You do not want to go into an overpass area. Those areas have been shown, it's a kind of a myth, the overpass areas have been shown to actually provide stronger winds in those areas, and people have gotten blown out of those areas. So you don't really want to go there either. The other thing about when you're out driving, and I want to mention that especially with this weekend's weather coming up, is you don't want to drive into floodwaters.
Mm-hmm.
Flooding is our number one weather killer. Mm-hmm. It kills more people every year than tornadoes do. It kills more people than lightning does. It kills more people than winter storm does. And the primary reason that people lose their lives in flooding is because they drive their vehicles into floodwaters. So, and it's hard to tell at nighttime and how deep that water may be, and that erosion may have wiped that roads away. So we're going to have some rain, heavy rain the next few days. So I wanted to mention that as well.
Yeah,
but keep in mind flooding as well.
Okay. Well, so just to be clear, you probably, if it's really severe, and we talked about tornadoes, but if you're driving through a heavy thunderstorm, which we say we have more of here in the Midwest, I mean, in that case, also stay away from the underpasses because if the winds are severe, they can blow you out from under there. Are you always safer away from the car than in the car?
Well, yes.
Mike's shaking his head,
going back and forth, kind of doing the old. You know, I think it's like Jason said, assessing the situation. If it's a heavy thunderstorm and maybe you've got winds 35 to 40 miles per hour. They're not severe, but it's an intense thunderstorm, and there's a lot of lightning in it. Obviously, you don't want to step out of the car because the car is going to protect when it comes to lightning. In a situation where, as Jason mentioned, you have a tornado bearing down on you and you have no other option, then the best option may be to get out of the car and find a ditch and just make yourself as low to the ground as possible. It really just depends on the situation.
Because if a tornado is going to strike your car, it's going to be able to easily pick up that car and throw it. And that if you're in that car when that happens, that's just going to be like being in a pretty severe accident. And you want to be away from that car because if the tornado does pick it up, you don't want the tornado to come by and pick up the car and throw it into the ditch where you're hiding. That's no good either. A prime example was last spring when we lost some severe...
2 years ago, I think. It was two years ago.
We lost several spotters out in Oklahoma, well-trained storm spotters. And unfortunately, they had nowhere to go, and tornado came and bared down on them, and they were in their car, and their cars were blown, and they did not survive the storm.
Oh, boy. So then, as a rule of thumb, get out of the car. If it's bad, get out of the car.
If the torrent,
and get to a ditch.
Just like Mike said, when that tornado is bearing down on you.
There's lightning and all of that sort of stuff. If it's tornado, get out of the car. If it's a thunderstorm and you got a lot of lightning and a lot of heavy atmospheric activity, perhaps stay inside the car.
And I think, John, just to take that even a step further, we talk about the danger with cars. Mobile homes.
That's a cliche.
It's a cliche, but if you live in a mobile home, if you know someone that lives in a mobile home, be thinking with that severe weather plan as you put it together where you can go in the instance of a tornado coming into the area, because the structure of the mobile home isn't safe in that regard. And if you have a friend that lives in a nearby house or something like that, or maybe an office building nearby, be thinking to include that in your severe weather plans when this kind of weather comes up.
And this may be a stupid question, but, I get paid to ask the ones that other people. But I'm thinking that, if a tornado can lift the car and throw it into the air, what keeps it from just lifting you and throwing you in the air?
Well, it may be able to lift you and throw you in the air, but you may be able to grab onto something onto the ground or get to the lowest point where the winds may not be as strong to hold on. Part of the tornado actually lifting a vehicle off the air is actually the air is getting underneath the car.
Yeah. Okay.
And it's sort of providing it as a form of lift.
So you really should be hugging the earth as tight as you can.
Exactly.
You're not letting any kind of jet draft or anything like that. So you mentioned there's likely to be heavy rain. What are some tips for people to get ready for this weekend?
Well, first off, have a source of weather information. Make sure you stay aware of what's going on. If
and
we
feel
issue
free
flood
to plug
watches,
yours if you want to.
Yeah, go right ahead.
Have a source. You can follow us at www.weather.gov/IND. That's the National Weather Service. We're on Twitter at NWS Indianapolis, and we're on Facebook under U.S. National Weather Service. So you can interact with the meteorologist. We're monitoring that 24/7, and you can answer us questions. And we'll, as long as we're not too busy, we'll get back with you and answer your weather questions that you may have.
Okay, and what other things should people look out for real quickly?
Well,
we've got about 30 seconds.
This weekend, watch for the rain. If we issue those flood watches, don't drive your vehicle into flood waters. If you see barriers put up by the local government, turn around, find another way to go.
Turn around, don't drown.
Turn around, don't drown. Yeah. And so with a lot of these slogans, you look for a rhyming effect here, right?
It's
catchy. Drives home. You remember it in your mind.
It does stick in. It is a memory device.
Yeah.
Well, I'd like to thank both of you for what's been not just an enlightening but a pleasant conversation. I'd like to thank my guests, Jason Puma and Mike Ryan of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We will be back next Tuesday when we're going to be talking with veterans about how the state of Indiana treats veterans and their issues. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive media coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Terzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.